Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Wake up to a delicious morning with your favorite McDonald's breakfast sandwiches, now just $2, only in the app. Choose from a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit, sausage McMuffin, or bacon, egg, and cheese McGriddles, just $2, only in the app. That's a deal as irresistible as the sandwiches themselves. Plus, you'll save time by ordering ahead in the app. Offer valid one time per day from July 29th through September 1st at participating McDonald's. Must opt into rewards.
Welcome to the Multifamily Zone, where business meets family. We explore what the entrepreneur life looks like from the family perspective. Now, here are your hosts, Julia and Gino Barbaro.
Hey, everyone. This is Julia Barbaro, host of the Multifamily Zone podcast. I'm here with a co-founder of Jake and Gino, my co-host and husband, Gino Barbaro.
We've got a good guest today and a great show. How's everything going?
It's good.
Jewel, today's guest is Will Witt. After leaving college, Will began working with nonprofits to help spread the values of freedom and conservatism. He's now creating online content for PragerU, helping young people stand up for the values they believe in. He's also the author of How to Win Friends and Influence Enemies. Everyone's got to go out and buy the book. Please welcome to the show, Will Witt. Hey, how you doing,
welcome.
Bro?
I'm good, man. Thanks so much for having me, you too.
Woo! There's so many questions. We can go on for hours, but really, what I want you to do, you're 25 years old. I just had an interview with G. Edward Griffin, who wrote The Creature of Jekyll Island.
I don't want to interrupt you, but I just finished that book. That was a life-changing book.
Yes.
Really, I mean, amazing.
So go to the Jake and Gino channel. We have one from him 3 years ago, Prophetic, talks about what was going on with the money supply and banking and the Fed Reserve. Mm-hmm. We just had a brief interview with him last week, and I asked him, how do you stand up to people? He's 89 years old. He says he was naive. He says he has the crusader. So I think Will Witt has a little bit of that crusader gene. And we all have that crusader gene inside of us. But you have the courage and the audacity to stand up for it and to activate that crusader gene. How did that happen?
Well, first of all, thank you. That means a lot. And I think what you said is exactly right, that I do have the crusader gene. I also think that it's inside everyone else. Mm-hmm. I think that they have to understand that they have it. But I think people feel way too, I guess, mediocre with their own lives, that they don't feel like they can actually stand up for something. You know, I was just tweeting about this today, that postmodernism, as it has taken over Western culture, as Christianity and that sort of moral system has been fading for, you know, the last 100 years, basically nihilism has taken over and leftism have taken over as the dominant religions. And what does postmodernism tell people? It tells people that suffering, which is supposed to be a natural part of life, that you use suffering and it's actually good for you, is bad, and you should only try to maximize pleasure. And through this pleasure, you are committing hedonistic or immoral actions that fill the void of a meaningless life. And that is really what it comes down to, with not just people who are on the left, but people who are conservatives or maybe Christians who are losing their faith. It is a major problem. It emasculates the men. It makes the women feel like they have to be these sex objects, like on social media, as you'll see. And it is totally destroying society. And so because of this postmodern attitude that people have towards the world, people don't feel like life means anything. And then they also don't feel like they need to stand up for something. They don't feel like, as Nietzsche would call it, they need to be the Übermensch or the higher man, right? And so I found that, because when I became a conservative, I was a liberal atheist my entire life. And when I became a conservative, you realize that I had been lied to my entire life. People were lying to me for 18 years of my life. I had no idea, and it was nefarious, and it was evil, and it was making my life worse. And also not just my life, but the people who were close to me. The actions that I was taking part in were making my life and other people's lives worse all around me. And so once I realized that I was being lied to, it was like, well, now I have to go and do something, right? I felt called to take the truth and go out there and actually do something about it. So that's really how it happened to me. And I feel like most people, when they feel like they've been lied to and there actually is a greater purpose for life and that you can use that suffering, it'll totally change people.
I love that. Question is from my niece, Emily, big fan. And I'd love to know also your conversion. How did that conversion take place? I mean, living with a single mom, correct? And then having an older brother, looking up to your older brother, and then finding out that, wow, not everything seems as it is. Going to college, sitting next to an African-American girl, the teacher saying it's your fault that she's, you know, I read in the book, it's a great story. Everyone's got to read that story in the book. That is shocking to a young adult, and saying, I didn't do anything. I'm just going to college here. Can you walk us through your conversion?
Yeah, I mean, you said a decent amount of it, but even more than that, I mean, one of the most important things that I like to tell people about, which I actually didn't include in the book, but when I was becoming a conservative, is that I was still figuring things out politically. This was my sophomore year of college, and a girl came up to me, and she had a Trump pin on her backpack, and she said, I'd never met this girl before, and she just said, hey, who are you voting for? I was like, I don't know. Why are you talking to me? I don't know you. You know, but anyway, we get into this conversation and she's like, oh, I'm voting for Trump. And we're talking about why and what I think and what she thinks. And I was like, I'd never really met this girl before in my life, but she came up to me and started talking to me about all these political things. And because of her coming up and talking to me is part of the reason why later that night and that week, I was going and researching and reading and doing all sorts of things, watching videos, all sorts of stuff to figure out the world around me. And I realized, like, wow, the world is way different than I thought it actually was, right? And so it's like, just took one person to come up and have that conversation with me and start talking to me for me to actually get more involved. She's actually one of the people who got me first hooked up with Turning Point USA, right, which then got me hooked up with the Leadership Institute and then PragerU eventually down the line. And so it was like, because one girl decided to do this, now I'm able to do what I do now with all the influence that I have because one person decided to talk to me. Mm-hmm. And so I found that, you know, at the time I didn't think much about it. I was just like, oh, this girl talked to me. But now looking back and thinking about it, it truly is remarkable that she did that. And I think that we all can be that person to go out and talk to people. It's like that old saying, not everyone can help everyone, but everyone can help someone. Mm-hmm. That's what it really boils down to.
And Will, to piggyback off of that real quick, the great Stephen Covey says, people see the world as they are, not as it is. So if you're in your little box and you're in your little microcosm and all you hear is things that you believe in or gravitate towards, or that's what Facebook and Google and all these platforms are doing, it's not a good thing. You're seeing the world from yourself. You're not experiencing it from others. But let's continue on that conversion a little bit. So you've talked to this girl, you're a sophomore in college. All of a sudden Trump, I've probably never even heard of Trump. And if you're in California, he's the devil. I mean, so I can't vote for him. So continue on that conversion. Getting closer.
Yeah. So I was actually already, this was when I was still in Colorado, when I was going to university in Colorado. Also, I hope my dog isn't making too much noise. He's a big knucklehead. Anyway, but I was in Colorado and after this, I started getting really involved and I started basically skipping all my classes because I hated the college classes I was taking. And I would instead go onto my campus, set up a table and debate students on all these different topics. I just found that incredibly fun. I've always liked really just talking to people about their ideas, and you can do it in a compassionate and non-confrontational way where you can actually change minds. And so that's where I got all my practice for being able to talk to people and like the tools that are in the book of all the questions and persuasion tactic and things like that. I learned setting up a table and just going and talking to people, right? That's what I wanted to do. And then my professors from my classes would walk by and be like, Will, you're not in class. What are you doing? I'm like, well, this is just more important to me right now, you know? Exactly. And so I did that. And so then eventually I found out about PragerU and they were like, oh, you can join PragerForce, our student program. You can make a video for us. So I did, basically doing the same thing, but I was talking to women on my campus, what they thought about the wage gap. And I taught myself how to edit the video and shoot it. And I sent it to PragerU. They ended up loving it. And then long story short, they offered me a job. And so after 2 years, I dropped out of school in Colorado, moved to Los Angeles to do what I do now for PragerU. And that was about 4 years ago.
And what did your parents think? Dropping out of college? What are you, crazy? You got a great gig in college. You're moving to California. You're taking a job. What's going on? What do they think about it all?
Yeah. Well, my first year of college, I mean, I screwed up a lot because I was just making bad choices. I was partying all the time I was like that person I was talking about before, this nihilist person. And so I was doing stupid things. You know, that's what it was my freshman year. And so my mom was like, you need to get your act together. So sophomore year, I was like, okay, I'm going to get my act together. But then I did it in a different way. I still didn't go to class, but this one was for actually something I really enjoyed doing, a life-changing thing, right? Mm-hmm. And so my mom at the time and my grandparents were very nervous about it. And they're like, well, you're going to drop out and you don't know what's going to happen. It's a big risk. And of course it was, you know, and for any parent to say that, I totally get why my mom would say that. You know, your parent is not supposed to be your friend. Your parent is supposed to be a role model and leader for you to teach you the right things from the wisdom that they've garnered. And so I totally get why my mom was upset about what I was going. I just knew what I had. I knew that the passion that I had and the fire that was inside me and also all the knowledge and research that I had doing what I did for the last year in college, I knew that there was a lot that I could do outside of college that was going to be different than being within it. So I did it. That's really all there is to it. I did it and I'm incredibly happy.
I have a question. Okay. So we homeschool our children and, you know, I kind of get caught up into this as well, but I remember when I was in school, there was always this one kid who would always question the teacher, and he always got sent out of the classroom because we're not taught to question anything. We just have to listen and that's it, and learn and go from there. And so it's almost like no one can debate anything anymore. Mm-hmm. We have the facts, but we're not allowed to. Mm-hmm. And so you learned to debate, you learned it during college. And I think that that's something that's missing right now in society, is to be able to actually have a conversation with someone and help them change their mind. Tell us how you do it. I want to hear your strategy.
Thank you. Yeah, Dostoevsky, you know, he had the famous quote where he said, it's better to go wrong in your own way than right in someone else's way. Mm. And that was pretty beneficial to me, hearing that and realizing that, you know, I don't want to just be parroting or doing things that other people want. And I don't want other people to be like that either. I want them to figure things out for themselves. And again, like looking back at my story, I went 18 years not knowing what a Republican was, mm-hmm. not knowing any of this stuff, you know, not knowing what socialism was. I had no idea, but I thought that I was on the left. And so many of these people, I've just never heard these differences of ideas. And so I'll go on my, like, one of the most common comments or whatever on my videos that I'll see, they're like, oh, these leftists and mm-hmm. these people you talk to, they're so stupid and they're idiots. I'm like, there's a pretty good chance that a lot of these people are probably smarter than you. Mm-hmm. They have high IQs and all sorts of stuff, but they just haven't ever heard these ideas. So when I go out there, I'm not making content for conservatives. I'm making content for everyone. I'm making content so that people who are watching will say, hey, that was actually a really good conversation. And the strategies employed there are actually useful for having conducive talks with people. Mm-hmm. And so what the main point, I would say it's two things. I mean, first, I think it comes from a place of compassion when you're going and talking to people. Mm-hmm. And that comes from asking questions. That comes from not going up and telling people what to think, but you're asking them what they think, mm-hmm. because it's not necessarily you changing their mind. It's them changing their own mind because they can't answer the questions that you gave them. Right.
Yeah.
And it's just way more conducive to having a good talk. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, I think it's about humility. Mm-hmm. I think that it's us having a little humility and going up to someone if we're talking to them and realizing that, hey, I don't know everything. Mm-hmm. I don't know all this stuff. You know, there's a lot that this person could also teach me about the world. Like, since the pandemic started and I've been reading a lot more and talking to people, all sorts of things, my political views have changed a lot from when I first started, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I almost, this parts of my political and cultural perspective that I wouldn't recognize from 4 years ago when I first started, right? Mm-hmm. And that's, and a lot of people don't want to admit when they're wrong and that someone else bested them in one of these things. But that is what America is supposed to be about. I mean, mm-hmm. America is not supposed to be about safe spaces. It's supposed to be about unsafe spaces where people with unpopular ideas or ideas that are at least just different come together to find what the best solution is by pitting them against each other, right? I mean, that's mm-hmm. what the founding of this country was. You have this handful of guys of the founding fathers who had the wildly unpopular idea to rebel against the British Empire and start their own country. Like, think about how radical and unpopular that was, but they did it anyway. And because mm-hmm. of their doing it, made the greatest country in the history of the world, you know? And so I am a big fan of these unpopular ideas. And I think that they need to be discussed in a compassionate way where we are using questions and humility to really have good conversations.
All you need is 10 to 15% of those people. As G. Edward Griffin said, you're the tip of the spear, Mr. Witt. G. Edward Griffin's the tip of the spear. Hopefully Julia and Gino are the tip mm-hmm. of the spear. We're the 15%. That's all you need to have right. quote unquote a revolution of ideas. You have a great tip in the book to change somebody's mind. Put people you're talking to in the shoes of whoever you're talking about. That's an amazing tip, everybody. And also, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Mm. That is also putting emotion into it. You can use logic all we want, but we have to use emotion when we're debating people. So, Will, I'm going to go into the business mode now. You are Will Witt, the brand, okay? Mm-hmm. The brand. Every great brand, Jake and Gino, we have a catalyzing statement, right? We create multifamily entrepreneurs. For our Personal Finance Academy, I say people with financial intelligence can change the world for the better. Now, have you ever thought of a catalyzing statement? You know, get it there in under 30 minutes. That's Domino's. What is your catalyzing statement? What is your mission statement?
You know, I have to kind of, Dennis Prager is my mentor. You know, he's been my mentor for the last 4 years working at PragerU, and a lot of his wisdom has translated over to me to a, you know, a lesser, younger degree, but, you know, to the best of my ability. And his statement that you're speaking of is that since he was younger, he wanted to influence people to the good. Mm-hmm. That has been his number one thing. And for me, I feel incredibly similar in my aspect, especially now after the pandemic and seeing just how, you know, there are people at the top who care nothing about us and they pit us against each other, right? And it's like, I don't care if you're Republican, I don't care if you're Democrat, none of that matters to me. What I care about is if you believe in good things, if you if you love good things and you hate evil. If you are that type of person, then you and I are going to get along. But if you believe in evil things, or you push evil things into this world, then my job is the vanquisher of that evil. That is what I mean to do. And so I pursue good and try and push that on as many people as possible and destroy evil as much as I can.
I like that. Pursuing awesome. Good while being the vanquisher of evil. I just got your cataloging statement for you in less than 5 minutes.
Took me
6 months to get mine. It took 30 seconds to get yours, man. That's great. That is awesome, dude. I love that.
I need business cards now with it on it. Vanquisher of evil. CEO of vanquishing evil.
I love that, dude. That's excellent. What's your vision for America? Let's get back. I'm going to pull the business away because the wife is going to start prodding me going, no business. But what's your vision for America, for God? You know, the strong family, the culture.
Yeah, I want to go into family. Definitely.
Okay, let's go into family then.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I put in the last chapter of my book, which was my favorite chapter of
all time. I got there and I was like, yes, this is what I love.
Oh, thank you. Yes. I appreciate that a lot. It was my favorite thing to write in the book, for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, it was about the length of 4 chapters and in one chapter, the conclusion, which is kind of weird for most books. The publisher was like, this is kind of different than usual. But anyway, I wanted to do it that way. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're unpopular opinions, right? Yeah. Anyway, the vision for America, one of the key tenets of that vision for America that I put as the second part was family and bringing back the family unit. The left wants to destroy the family unit. Postmodernism wants to destroy the family unit. And there is nothing that is more important other than God than the family unit. I mean, the family unit and God are connected right to each other. Mm-hmm. You know, people want to go and complain about the world and they want to say, oh, all this is so screwed up and it's the racism and it's the capitalism and social economics and all these kind of things. And they forget that they don't talk to their parents because of who they voted for, right? And it's like the things that really matter in your life that are going to give you fulfillment are not there because America is breeding a culture that disincentivizes people to be in families or at least even have strong family connections. Mm-hmm. And so when people don't feel like they have a great meaning in their life, that part of that is family, part of that is starting a family, any of these things, then they are going to turn to these other causes for their quote unquote religion that they are going to be a part of. And so they have sacrificed the family to have their own sort of leftist postmodern religious view. And so bringing back the family is going to be, and not just bringing back the family, but bringing back a family where the parents are in charge of the kids. Yes. Okay. A parenting structure where the parents don't tell the kids you're a winner just because you breathe, right? One that doesn't just give a trophy to everyone, ones that actually teaches kids good values that is inseparable from their education, that doesn't just send someone to school for 8 hours and expect them to be good kids. You know, so it's about the parents having a bigger role to play in the kids' lives. Mm-hmm. And then it's about the kids not, you know, there's no asterisk next to the fifth commandment, honoring your father and mother. You know, there's, even if your parents are bleeding heart communists, there is no asterisk. You still honor them no matter what. And so kids need to remember that as well. So it's a responsibility of both. It's a responsibility of both of those things. And then once you have that from a cultural perspective, then you can start working on the bureaucratic level and the special corporate interest level to actually change the culture around it to make families more better. But people need to first, it's like, I think I include this in my book with Jordan Peterson, you know, he says, get your house in perfect order before you criticize the world, essentially. Mm-hmm. And that's a big deal. You have to look at your own life before you start going and saying all these other things are bad. And that starts with the family.
Do you mind if I share a quick story about my family in Italy? My mom,
of course,
was an immigrant in Italy. They emigrated, so I'm first generation here. And I remember them being poor back then, back in the 50s and 60s. But one thing that always resonated with me, she always said, no matter how poor we always had our cousins and aunts and uncles down the street where they can go grab a piece of bread. And it always that family unit that they can lean upon. And when they came here and immigrated here, that family unit was still intact. So that idea of being able to lean on to a family member, my children are older, they're getting older, they're out of the house, they always have dad to come back and lean on them. And there's power in that. And I always remember that. So it has nothing to do with socioeconomic because they were as poor as dirt back then. Mm-hmm. If they didn't grow the potatoes, they ain't eating in the wintertime. So having that family unit, to me, I totally 100% agree with you. It is the foundation what this country was built upon. And when you have a family unit, you have that self-esteem, you have that the ability to go to pop or mom.
You know what? It's never too late. And I talk to a lot of couples that are married for 20 years and like, you know what? It's too late for us. No, it's not. You can start over your marriage anytime you want it. you can decide today to make different choices in your marriage and to make different effort into, because it does take effort to be, have a good, strong relationship. We had a pretty good relationship, but for the past 5 years, it's been excellent, you know, and it, but it takes a lot of effort and a lot, it's very challenging and, you know, and people don't want that. They want easy. And so that's why there's divorce, you know, it's not going so well. We kind of, you know, lost track of each other. We're getting divorced. No, you got to put the effort into it, because the thing is the kids see it. The kids see that they can come out of it. You know, I like you was raised by a single mother, but I always had a desire to be married, stay home and have a family. And let me tell you, I got yelled at by many women in my 20s that were like, no, you go get a career. I'm like, nah, I'm going to go get married. I just drive people crazy. But because I really had a passion, I knew it was right. And I saw the value in it. And so I, what is your, talk to me about marriage. I know you're not married yet. And my gosh, we're praying for a really good wife because you need a strong wife. So, you know, we always put God first, our marriage second, and then the kids and everything else. And it just, it's been working. Let me tell you, it really makes a difference. And it's not that hard, but it's the formula for a good life.
So what's the question, baby? Marriage? You want him to get married already?
I want you to get married. Yeah.
Listen, find me a wife and we'll make it happen. Okay. We'll do it.
I'll probably get a lot of emails after this podcast. Yeah.
Exactly. I think it was important what you were mentioning before about how, you know, things, you can start making different choices in your life to affect your marriage or your relationship with your kids or anything. But we live in the native land of people who don't want to take responsibility for their actions. Right. You know, it's much easier to blame other people or to blame a system as a whole or blame my job or the money that I have or whatever. You know, it's like you can blame all these things. But regardless of all of that, you put yourself into situations that got you to where you are. Mm-hmm. And so it takes people to be held accountable for themselves to actually make changes. It's like right now, this isn't necessarily about marriage, but like, look at America right now. Look at these, like the airline companies or the big banks, instead of having to be accountable for the stupid things that they do, they get bailed out by the taxpayers anytime they want. Right. And that is a disgusting, horrible thing. And so people don't have to be accountable for their actions whatsoever in this country. And so that is dissipated down from the top all the way to the single family unit. And so marriage is about taking responsibility. It's about making good choices and, you know, as much as you can, even if you don't always know how something's going to turn out. You're doing your best to make good choices. And you will find that when you look at even from a data perspective, people who are married live happier lives. People who are married make more money. They're healthier. They volunteer more. They do more for charity. They do all of these different things that make a good society. I mean, you will find little to no data supporting the fact that marriage does not make people's lives better. You will always, for the most part, find the inverse of that. Mm-hmm. And so marriage is the bedrock of America. It truly is. And the fact that there are people want to destroy it is just more indicative of a greater point of the vision for America that these people have versus the one that I think God has.
Before we end the show, I just want to jump into capitalism real quick, because there's an amazing chapter. There's so many great chapters in the book, but you debunk why socialism is not what it's cracked up to be and why is capitalism the model. And we're not talking about crony capitalism. Will can get into that. We're talking about pure capitalism, not the kinds where Will's talking about, you know, these banks where they're set up to fail, or you have the Solyngers of the world where they get $500 million and then you go bankrupt two years later. About capitalism.
Capitalism is the greatest tool to get people out of poverty. It makes it so that that Italian family, you know, that you were just talking about, these people are dirt poor. They can come to America and they can start something amazing or work hard and do something great in their lives, right? That's the ability of capitalism. You come into socialism and it's a zero-sum game, essentially, then, where they are already basically told how their lives are going to be before it even begins. But with capitalism, you have endless opportunity. Capitalism is so easy, but people want to make it so hard. Mm-hmm. You'll have the people in the bureaucratic positions of this country and in the top elite positions of this country. And they'll tell you, you know, you just need to leave these things to the experts, right? The experts know better. You don't need to worry about these things. Capitalism, that's pretty confusing stuff. No one has time to read Wealth of Nations or whatever. And it's like, all it is that if you have $5 and I have a sandwich and you want the sandwich and I want $5, we trade. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's literally what capitalism is in its, in its purest form. It is so easy to understand. And it is something that everyone, if they just knew, could get behind. right? Mm-hmm. Socialism is the government coming in and saying, well, this person doesn't have a sandwich and you're greedy with the $5. So we're going to redistribute that sandwich to him because he doesn't have one. And then you don't have money. And also you don't have your sandwich, mm-hmm. you know? So it's like, that is how it works with socialism mm-hmm. versus the way capitalism is. It's mutual transactions between us. And again, we could get into the cronyism and what we're seeing in this country now with so many horrible things that I think is going to be a big focus on my next book. And I actually want to talk to Griffin and see if, about the Federal Reserve mm-hmm. and everything, because that is just huge for what I want to write about. But that's what I'm hoping to do in the next book as well.
Well, I have one more question.
I do too.
So one more question. What was your favorite part of the book? What did you really enjoy about the book? What was your favorite chapter in the book?
My favorite chapter of the book was definitely the last chapter, A Vision for America. Mm-hmm. That one, I think a lot of the political topics that I wrote about, not that they won't be relevant for a long time, but data changes, politics changes, those types of things, you know, they're not always sedimentary. I mean, they are moving and being obfuscated by all sorts of different stuff that changes. And so all those different chapters, they change. But the Vision for America chapter, I specifically wrote that chapter as a means for someone in 100 years could get the 17th edition of How to Win Friends and Influence Enemies, mm-hmm. and it would still hold true. Mm-hmm. And someone like historians 1,000 years from now can look back and say, this is what they were trying to do back then, right? This is what freedom people during the 21st mm-hmm. century believed in, right? That's what I wanted it to be. I wanted it to be something that was long lasting for a long time, that someone could always read and take away and always know what is the best course for not just America, but a society or individual in general. So that was my favorite to write for sure. I really enjoyed that.
Love that. Beautiful. I'm learning to sing an opera here, so I got to get in there.
I knew there was something coming on because he's creeping in.
And she's pushing me.
I was like, what's going on?
Please go to Barry's. Right. I love embarrassment.
It's great.
My question is, we have two strong men on this podcast. You're both making a difference in people's lives. And I want the both of you to give some suggestions, give some advice, something to all the men out there that are listening that maybe don't have the courage to speak out or to be the strong husband in the home. Or, you know what I mean? I want something from both of you, to the a message to the men.
Age before beauty. I'll go first, I guess. It's my cue. For me, it's very simple. You need to create your values. And how you create your values, Stephen Covey says, start with the end in mind. I'm looking at myself at my funeral. I'm surrounded by my family. I can start singing again. Salve Regina.
We'll videotape you.
Yeah.
And then we'll play it. Okay.
But I want happiness. I want to see the thousands of people that I've impacted. I want to see my wife taken care of with her estate, with having any problems with money. I want to see my 6 kids, my 24 grandkids. I want to see all of that. Let's reverse engineer that to how it is today. I need to create my values and what values I have to live by. How do I achieve that? Through hard work, through dedication, through 100% responsibility junkie, through taking care of my family, being the role model, working really hard. And that's how you achieve it, having that vision. And is it hard? Absolutely. I've been in business since I'm 24 years old. I've never haven't received a paycheck from anybody else in the last 26 and 27 years. And I love it. That's the way I want it. That's the way I've done it. If we all accept responsibility and we all think about what we want to achieve in the future, and we have a plan for that. Let's set our goals based on what we want to achieve, not on what the world wants us to achieve. What is our vocation? My wife's vocation was to stay home. My vocation was to be a dad and to be an amazing role model for my kids. If I can do that, then I've lived a great life. How about you, Will?
That was really well said. I'll try and say something different. I think that it takes a lot about becoming the individual person that you want to be. I think so many people want to tell you as a man that you need to be a part of this collective group, that to be a man, you have to think this way, or you have to be this certain type of person, or you have to do what other people want you to do. But there comes a time, I'll say this. I understand why people in their work say, I'm going to get the vaccine because otherwise I'm going to get fired. Maybe I'm a single dad or single mom and I have 3 kids, I have to do it. Or you're a student at university and they say, hey, you have to write this leftist paper, or you're going to fail the class, or, you know, your even your family will label you as a pariah if you don't agree with things they say. I understand why people do what they do in all these sort of situations, but it comes to a certain point where you sacrifice enough of yourself and enough of the truth that you are no longer the person that you thought that you were. Right. It's like, how much are you willing to sacrifice to appease other people when you should be trying to appease God? That's what you should be doing. Right. Or at least the right people in your life, you know, the people who actually matter. And so I think people put such a high credence on what other people are thinking about them and not on what God thinks about them, and what America's actually founded on, and all, and individualism. People feel safe in the mob. This is why cancel culture exists. They feel safe when they're surrounded by people who have the same ideas as them. Mm-hmm. And so to really become the best person you can be is to become the most, in the purest sense, the most radical individual you can be. What I mean by radical is by letting go of the collective and the herd and being totally an individual away from the things that other people want you to do.
You're going to love G. Edward because he talks about collectivism and the evil of it. And really, you can be have a collective idea or work collectively, but that's not collectivism. It's a huge difference. So I'm going to get that recording over to you. You're going to love it. Last question before we wrap up. Where do you see yourself in 5 years? The Will Witt, the vanquisher of evil. Where is he in 5 years from now? Goals.
Hopefully a little cabin in the woods somewhere, you know, with my own little farm and a wife and dogs. You know, that's what I'm really hoping to do outside of Los Angeles. But in terms of a bigger role, it's hard to say. You know, people always ask me this question and what I want to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, I am very satisfied in the things that I am doing now, but I'm very worried about the future of this country. And so in 5 years, what I hope that I can do, if I'm not in a gulag at that point, is to be just more influential with more and more people, influencing them to the good. Like I talked about before, I just want to have more and more people who are hearing my ideas and the ideas of great people like Dennis Prager and just American values and reading history and learning it and understanding what this country was founded on. I just want more people to feel like they can make a change, that they can do something great. If I can influence even one more person during that time, it'll be a truly wonderful thing. So that's, you know, that's what I really want
to
be.
You did say something in the book that God is in control. And I think that's something that we should pay attention to and trust. But I just want to thank you before my husband wraps it up. I want to thank you for your courage, for seeking out the truth and actually sharing the message to people, because it does take courage. And it constantly, it's not, you know, you do one thing, sometimes you're like, well, I'll never do that again, but you keep getting up and trying it again. And you, in all of this, you kept your humility, and that is incredible. So I just want to thank you for that.
Thank you. Appreciate that a lot.
Where can the listeners get a hold of you, Will?
They can get my book anywhere books are sold: Amazon, Books a Million, Barnes and Noble, How to Win Friends and Influence Enemies. And then you can follow me on social media anywhere at The Will Witt. That's Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, whatever.
Love that. So at the age of 18, Will goes to college. He is in Colorado. He's not going to class. He's really screwing up. His sophomore year, he's hanging out, probably doing much better than his teachers. He's learning a lot more. And he decides, this gig ain't for me. I'm moving to Los Angeles. I'm making a video for PragerU. And that's the one step, taking 100% responsibility for your life, figuring out what God wants you to do, figuring out what your soul purpose is, what your passion is, and then leading it and taking a chance and activating that crusader gene that we all have within ourselves. Every single one of us listening to it, it's out there. Find the other 15% that you can surround yourself with, and you can create an amazing life. The pursuer of truth and the vanquisher of evil. I thank you for being on the podcast. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Will.
Hey, man. God bless you guys. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Take care, everybody. Thanks.